Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I am a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a brandy brander, and I love film. As Jacqueline Carey once said, all knowledge is worth having. And all the films of Paul Thomas Anderson are worth seeing, not a bad one amongst them. I mean, that's not exactly a hot take from Jackie, but one that's certainly true. I mean, they're all brilliant. He's amazing. What are we even talking about anymore? Every week I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Jamila Jamil, and even Ked Bambles. But this week, it's the brilliant comedian, actor, writer, producer, director, and movie star, Mr. Kevin Pollak. Huge announcement. I'll be doing a big live Films to be Buried With live at the South Bank Centre on Saturday, the 12th of February. Come along, bring a date. It's going to be a good one. Tickets are available at southbankcentre.co.uk and plosive.co.uk. Would love to see you there. We'll do a Q&A after. You can tell us the films that mean the most to you. Me and the super special guest that I'm not announcing yet. Oh, we'll have a right old time. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes with Kevin, where we go deep, talking about beginnings and endings. You get a secret, you get the whole episode uncut, ad-free, and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Last bit of admin, Ted Lasso Season 2 is all available now, with Season 1 on Apple TV+. You can watch the whole show in one go. Super Bob is now on Amazon Prime, as is Soulmates, in a lot of countries. I don't know all the countries it's on, but it's in a lot of them. Have a look for it, you'll find it. So, Kevin Pollak. Kevin Pollak's a fucking movie star. I was so excited to have him on this. He's in A Few Good Men. He's in The Usual Suspects. He's in Casino. He's in pretty much every one of your favourite films. It was quite amazing that he wanted to do this podcast. We recorded it over Zoom. It was an absolute pleasure. I think you're going to love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 179 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by a podcaster, a writer, a producer, a stand-up comedian, a poker player, an actor, and most of all, a movie star who is in more films than maybe even I have seen. Please welcome to the show. He's a legend in his own lifetime and in yours. Please welcome, I can't believe we've got him, he's really here, put your hands together, it's Mr. Kevin Pollak!
Thank you, please be seated. Am I allowed to correct the introduction? Most people are very flattered with how you introduce them. I've listened to dozens of episodes.
You're disappointed, you've got notes?
Well done for the most part, but I do have notes on the
introduction. Okay, let's hear.
Yeah, well, it's just, if you've been around as long as I have, well, since we're both stand-ups, you know how in the beginning of your stand-up career, all you have is your introduction when the audience has no idea who you are?
Yes.
Right. So you're a little overly controlling on what the MC or whatever you call them says about you.
Yeah.
And the moment you get any sort of credit, those are even more important than anyone gives a shit about. So, yeah. So I would go to I would throw in director, if not international director.
I'm so sorry that I didn't. I actually thought I had said that. That's bad on my part.
And sure. Then maybe even award-winning director. It's, you know what, Brett? Yeah. It's not a competition. Goddamn.
Let's go back.
No, I don't want to. No redos. I'm forcing you to keep this part.
Award-winning director, just whack that in the edit.
Ah, fuck.
No. We'll be truthful and record my absolute shame. Here's the thing, though, Kevin Pollak, if I may say. The problem with doing your intro is often, if you have listened to the show, I'll expand on people's CVs, I'll make a thing. You have done so much stuff. I think more than any person I've ever had on a podcast. Your Wikipedia page is like 75 pages long. It's just reams and reams of credits. You've done more than you have had hot dinners. I think you've done more more types of jobs. Plus, you're in so fucking many amazing films. Like, you, more than anyone, you must be, who are you?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, if I may quote you, when we first met at the evening before, was it the evening before the Emmys? Was that the thing?
Yes, I think it was.
Yeah. We met, which I was very excited about, having been a fan of the show with our friend Sue Dakes. And you, I think one of the first things you said was, do you want me to cry? I was trying to get a gauge on whether, you know, the thing about all this credit stuff is when you meet someone, I mean, there's a reason my book is titled How I Slept My Way to the Middle. So as a character actor, you know, there's this face, right? Mm-hmm. Which potentially is more of a door opener than the name many times. You hear the name and someone says, oh, yeah, that sounds familiar. Who is that? Or I'll be in line at the grocery store and someone will turn around because they recognize me from my voice, which really must really freak you out. But I'm sure there's a point in here somewhere. But I do feel at some point that when you have all these credits you mentioned and all the stuff, you get to a place where you're joking about it just to not have to talk about it much.
Right.
So I'll say, I don't know the exact number of films I've done, 91, but I will say that six of them are quite good.
Which is a heck of a score.
Well, 6 out of 91 is actually a horrible batting average, but but you're not wrong in the sense that they're probably, if I were more truthful, maybe there's like 8 I could expand out to almost 10 that people have come up to me and insisted is their favorite movie. So,
yeah.
But that includes films that I don't like at all. So that's why I'm a little more concerned.
Obviously, we want to know which ones they are, but I don't know if you'll say that. I did want to ask you, if you have an answer, and maybe you don't, what's the favorite film that you've been in? What's your personal favorite? Because you have been in some classics.
Well, one of the difficult things from listening to your podcast when preparing, which I like to do, to be a guest on it, is the sort of definitive element of having to choose number one.
Yeah.
So that's the difficult thing. So for me, there were 3 truly life-changing moments. Barry Levinson's, I will dare say, masterpiece, Avalon. I went from just being a stand-up comedian to people thinking I was a New York-trained actor, which made me laugh endlessly because I've had no formal training as an actor. I'm not proud of it. It's just what happened. And then the next one was, of course, A Few Good Men, which for every actor, that goal line in American football terminology is going from auditioning to getting offers, right? So that's what happened after A Few Good Men. And then a couple years later, I'm on the set shooting Usual Suspects when my agent called and said, Martin Scorsese wants you to be in his next film, set in Las Vegas, also written by Nick Pileggi, who wrote Goodfellas, with De Niro and Pesci and Sharon Stone, arguably her best work. I didn't know at the time of the phone call, certainly. But anywho, so those 3 kind of 3.5-4 things were, just honestly and truly jettison forward momentum and beautiful movies, 2 of which shot by Bob Richardson.
Yeah,
A Few Good Men and Casino.
Are we allowed to talk about, we can cut this if not, what you were doing in Wales, or is that a secret?
I think we can. I think it was announced.
Okay, so you were in a film that meant a lot to me as a kid, and then you are now in the TV show of this film.
Well, I'm in one episode of the television show.
That would do for me.
Yep.
Do you want to name it?
You're also multiple award-winning co-star.
Yes.
Also in at least an episode. So 34 years ago, I did this movie that Ron Howard directed, George Lucas produced, sword and sorcery fantasy thing. Mm-hmm. And it was the first real movie I did. I did sort of a bad Dino De Laurentiis ripoff of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World with a bunch of comedians that...
What was that called?
Well, I'll just say this about it, Brett. It opened on an airplane. And there's only playing on flights between San Francisco and Los Angeles, so you had to have a round trip to see the whole film. And people still walked out. I've got material on these bad movies. What was it called? Million Dollar Mystery, I think it was called. Yeah, okay. Really, really bad. But I got to know Rick Overton while doing it, and he's the one who had worked with Ron Howard on Gung Ho. And so when Ron Howard was going to do Willow, he wanted Rick Overton as one of these little brownie characters, these 7-inch tall guys. You could argue they were the C-3PO and R2-D2 of Willow, the sort of comic relief guides or whatever. So anyways, Ron said, I picked 5 guys that you could improvise with, bring them in, and we'll do one at a time and figure out who the other brownie's going to be. So because Rick Overton suggested me, I went in, and that's how that happened. And I will say one of my all-time favorite parts, though, that movie Rick and I shot on the largest blue screen facility, which was up in Northern California, at ILM, the Lucas Ranch facility thing. I was born and raised in Northern California. My father came up because I'm finally in a movie that's big time with Ron Howard directing and George Lucas producing. And I introduced my father to George Lucas, and my father says, I really loved E.T. And to George's credit, who's not known for his sense of humor, George said, so did I.
It's a very good film.
Yeah, which was pretty good comeback for George.
Wow.
Yeah.
How was it, though, in all seriousness, you did this film 34 years ago, and now they're making a TV show, same cast, same story, a continuation of it. How was it to return to that world, etc.? Was it weird? Was it easy? Did you hate it? Did you love it?
Completely surreal, I would say. Yeah. Warwick Davis, who plays Willow in the movie and now the series, is the only series regular from the movie. Joanne Whalley, I think, is in a few episodes from she was in the movie. But I don't think anyone else, I think I'm the third. Anywho, so this time I did get to go to Wales. Originally, they shot the movie in Wales and New Zealand, and which we would watch on the monitor before we would do our scenes on the blue screen facility. 34 years ago. So, yeah, sure, when the agent calls and says, you know, they want you to do your character from a movie 34 years, yeah, it's just ridiculous. It's absurd. Until I got on a Zoom with Jonathan Kasdan, son of Lawrence and brother to Jake. Jake, the other very successful writer-director, right?
The other great Kasdan.
So Jonathan, like yourself, grew up with the movie and never let go and then pitched it to Disney Plus as this new giant sprawling world. And there you go. It was great.
And how was Wales?
Great fun.
Would you recommend?
Well, you know, it was early October in Wales. I think you know what that means.
It rained every single second of every single day.
it was grim. You know how you make friends on the award show circuit? You sort of bump into other people who were nominated around the same time. So Andrew Scott, with last go-round for Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Andrew Scott was cleaning up with...
Fleabag.
And so we sort of became friendly. And then Jamie, my better half, and I, Jamie, who you met at that evening before, who helped me a lot with my list, by the way. So Jamie and I became friendly with Andrew Scott. And we were going to go to... Paris and London, February of 2020, about 5 weeks before the world shut down, not knowing it was going to.
Right.
And when we told Andrew Scott, it reminded me of my Wales experience. He said, you're going to be in the UK in February. It's going to be grim. Yeah, that's a quote.
And he was not wrong.
He was not wrong, and we've said it many times. But yeah, so this time, Wales was... Yeah, obviously not as bad as it's going to be in February. And also, I am an Anglophile for sure. So anywhere near the UK. My mother's father, my grandfather, was born in Leeds. So I guess I'm technically halfer. And I've been told I can get my British passport because of this as well.
Ooh.
My mother's father. Anywho, so I've always had this affinity. And the idea of going to Wales was very exciting. And the experience was pretty damn cool.
That's great. Yeah. Do you forgive me for not knowing this, and genuinely, I'm sorry if you do. Do you still do stand-up?
On occasion. After Wales, I had another thing to shoot at the end of October, so I rented a home in Hampstead where I had my birthday dinner with a few friends, one of which is our mutual friend, name-dropping, Mr. Ricky Gervais, and Jane joined us. Yeah, it was lovely. But he was talking about my film stuff at the dinner and also had a much less gentle entree into, oh, fuck, I forgot you do stand-up. Right, fuck, yeah. I never think of you that way. So it's kind of weird. It's the weird, weird left turn in my career. I started out as a stand-up, no formal training as an actor. And then you get to LA and you just audition for everything. I mean, two weeks before Avalon, I think I auditioned for Full House, like with every other comedian in Los Angeles. And and that's the turn I would have taken had I got that job. And then after Avalon, A Few Good Men, and then really by Usual Suspects in Casino in 95, it was over. I kept doing stand-up and I, you know, would people would come see the dramatic actor. I guess he does stand-up. I don't know. You know, it was that sort of thing. We really did fuck with, at that point, 20 years. You know, I'd been at it a long time already. And it was a very, very bizarre thing. So I rarely get to be the funny person in these movies. In fact, in the case of A Whole Nine Yards, I had known the stars of Matthew Perry and Bruce Willis through other things. And when they were speaking with the British director, Jonathan Lynn? Yes, Jonathan Lynn. They said, you know, Kevin Pollak could be great as Yanni Gogolak. And Jonathan said, right, no, I mean, I get it. He's very diverse. I've seen Usual Suspects. I've seen A Few Good Men. He's very diverse. But, you know, fellas, this is a comedy. And as the story goes, Bruce Willis, or John McClane, as I always call him, grabbed him firmly at the shoulder and said, that's what he is. He's a comedian. So it's really been this painful struggle thing of it was my first love, and I it's still the happiest place on stage.
So you think an audience was turning up going almost like, well, let's see this guy try stand-up rather than he's a stand-up?
Often. I mean, I had a couple stand-up specials, and they had their own following. But the film career just overtook and commandeered my alleged fame to the point where it's weird to have such platitudes of success as an actor, and then I still have to do clubs. I can't do theaters because I can't sell enough tickets. You know what I mean? That's fucking weird. I don't mind clubs, and I've obviously performed in them my whole life, and so now when I say I perform stand-up on occasion, it is because it is a theater and someone has demanded that I show up.
Right.
Sort of thing. Interesting. Because I've just heard too many trays of drinks hit the ground over the last 40 years, you know.
It is depressing, that side. Yeah. You know, in England, it's not like that. You know, in England, we have intervals. You buy drinks. There's no, like, service happening during the shows.
And that's why you like probably Largo.
Yeah, exactly.
No drinks at all, yeah.
It's such a weird thing that you're in the middle of a bit and 300 drinks are being served and people sorry, what? Sorry, and you're like, oh, boy.
Yeah. And I'm a storyteller. I don't really do jokes. Yeah. In fact, I remember that turn where I committed full time to the stories. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing silence for the first time and thinking, you know, a comedian would panic if there's too much silence. But I actually ended up thinking, oh, fuck, they're listening. They're actually listening. Great. Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Kevin Pollak.
You forgot to tell me something?
Yeah. How can you tell? I've forgotten to tell you something.
I mean, it's difficult for me because I've listened to so many episodes and I know that you're a multiple award-winning actor now and I don't buy this bit at all.
So wait a second. Well, hang on. I've forgotten, so maybe you know? Maybe you could jog my memory.
I can help you with this.
Didn't I say I had something important to tell you when you do the podcast, but I can't. For the life of me, I cannot remember what it was. Do you remember? Do you have an inkling?
I do, and it might be difficult for you to wrap your brain around, more so than even remember.
Go ahead.
Well, sure, because we've been talking so long, and I think I've been somewhat engaging, but I'm dead. I've died. I died.
You're dead.
I died.
Fuck. I knew it. I knew it was something.
Yeah.
I knew it was something vaguely important. But you have been very engaged. You have been
maybe
very
that's the
engaging.
Name of this. That would be a great title for my second book, Vaguely Important.
The Vaguely Important Kevin Pollak. How did you die? Dear God, I'm so sorry.
So this was difficult because my instinct was on set doing better than average work.
The vaguely important, the better than average.
Yeah, slightly better than average work. And then I was jogging my memory and ideas through Jamie. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, no, you're going to die in your fucking Tesla because you're not paying attention. So
wow.
That's the other option. So,
but don't they self-drive? Isn't that the point?
I mean, they do, but I do like to.
You were too distracted to turn it on.
No, I do like to be involved in the actual driving of the car. I'm crazy that way.
Yeah. You're driving your Tesla.
And I'm learning how to drive it while I'm driving. Yeah, it's truly an engineering. I'm not a car guy at all. Yeah, but this damn spaceship is an engineering masterpiece. And so I'm fascinated by way too many aspects of it. And it's not that I'm not paying attention to the road. It's just
you're paying too much
I'm not
attention.
Paying attention. I'm not paying any attention to life.
Right. And do you drive into a wall? You don't take anyone with you, do you?
No, I don't take anyone with me. I drive into, you know, the very first one I had, I did rear end someone in the fast lane of the 405 freeway on a Friday night,
Jesus.
A week before Christmas,
oh,
if you could imagine, going down to the Irvine Improv to see an old pal, Dana Carvey, do stand up, true story. And it was stop and go traffic and, you know, you glance away for 2 seconds and I tapped somebody, but it was enough for the airbag to go off.
Shit.
And by the time I turned back and asked the couple we were with in the back seat, is everyone okay? My cell phone rang and it was, I'm not kidding, Tesla headquarters asking, is everyone okay? Not
wow.
kidding. Now, the writer's embellishment of that is that we looked up and Elon Musk was on a rope ladder from a helicopter above us with his hand out.
Screwdriver.
So,
question.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you crashed into the back of someone, and I'm assuming everyone was fine, when you got out the car to talk to them, were they like, holy shit, a few good men?
Even better. They were cranky because it's a Friday night and they were going somewhere. But when the police arrived, the police said, holy fuck, a few good men. We got this. And that was, there you go. I always slept my way to the middle. I just, that face, every now and then, it really comes in handy.
It really helps you evade the law. Tell me this. Do you worry about death, Kevin Pollak?
No, I don't worry about the act, the moment. I think about being present and not letting any more time slip by or take it for granted. So I'm spending too much time thinking about being present and being present than contemplating death or what it means.
What do you think happens, if you may contemplate it for a second? What do you think happens after you die?
Well, I just heard an episode where one of your guests did believe in the afterlife, and you were so delighted because apparently you'd had too many people on who just aren't buying it, and this woman was very effusive about. And you were so delighted. I thought, well, I'll use some of my award-winning acting talent at an appropriate moment. No, I'm a big science guy, which is why I struggle with life after death. But also because I'm a science guy, you can't destroy energy.
Mm.
Yeah, turns out it can't be destroyed scientifically. So I don't know what that means or how it manifests next. But one of my answers to one of your upcoming questions will expound a little bit on this.
Okay.
theory.
Well, let me tell you something. I'll tell you where that energy goes, Kevin Pollak. It goes straight up to heaven. There's a heaven, baby, and you're in it. You got there in the end. And I'll tell you how you got there, because you were vaguely important and slightly better than average. And that was the requirements.
Yeah, so great. I'm in heaven.
It's filled with your favorite things. What's your favorite thing?
Should I say movie watching because of the... Nope. I've been hosting a weekly poker game in my home since we moved in to this particular one 11 years ago. You know, I had a table custom made, and I have a friend who I said, you should go to poker dealing school. I'm about to change your life by dealing this game. And so, you know, you mentioned poker in the intro. It is certainly one of my favorite things.
Okay, well, this heaven is filled with inveterate gamblers, wall to wall, wall to wall gambling. Yeah, the walls are made of poker chips. The chairs are made of felt, and there are croupiers as far as the eye can see. And everyone is very good at poker, but not as good as you, but enough to keep you on your toes. Anyway.
Oh, that was a great episode of The Twilight Zone. Are you a Twilight Zone fan?
Go on, tell me.
There's a gambler who doesn't realize he's gone to hell, and he keeps winning. And what he thinks is his angel, Sebastian Cabot, plays what we think is an angel, and he's actually
a
demon.
That's brilliant.
But the guy keeps winning, and eventually he's like, he gets bored, because nobody wants to always win.
Amazing.
The truth is, a poker player will remember the hands they lose more than the hands they win.
It's like stand-up gigs. Tell me this.
Yep.
What? They're very excited to see you in heaven. Very excited. They're all huge fans. They want to talk about your life, but they want to talk about it through the medium of film. And the first thing they ask you, what is the first film you remember seeing, Mr. Kevin Pollak?
Okay, because I'm one of your older guests, maybe the oldest, I had to look up the movies. I knew I was 6 years old, and so I had to look up the movies of that year to help me sort of do a little math. And there were a couple of movies that I absolutely know I saw in the theater when I was 6. But I won't lie, I do not know which was first.
Okay.
So it was either Jason and the Argonauts.
Amazing. Amazing.
Truly amazing Ray Harryhausen stop motion stuff. And then the other one was It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Wow.
With all these comedians. And
look where it brought you.
Yeah.
I've seen both. I love both. And so, do you remember? Well, like, where was this happening? Where did you grow up, if I may?
In Northern California, my mom would take me to matinees, and she would later tell me that long before I did impersonations, which was, sort of became the cornerstone of the stand-up act. In fact, any one of these questions you can ask Christopher Walken.
Okay, just so you know. Right, okay, cool.
Now, I know it's become very pedestrian to do Christopher Walken, but I don't know if you know this, but if you Google search the phrase Christopher Walken impersonation,
yours is the best.
Sometimes you'll get as many as 60,000 search answers. That's how pedestrian it's become. Mm-hmm. There's 5 pages on YouTube dedicated to Asians doing Christopher Walken. I'm not kidding. And they're fucking hilarious. I'm number one on that Google search.
Respect.
Now, that and $6 will get me a coffee at Starbucks. It's really a bullshit sort of brag, but it's a fact. Okay. So I'm just saying. Okay. You can ask any one of these questions of Christopher Walken.
Okay.
So my mom told me that when I was 6 and she would take me to these matinees, I would walk out of the theater as someone in the film, not doing an impersonation, just transfixed by a performance, not even the actor.
That's nice.
And I do remember that. That was the big thing that remains to this day. If the film is good, I will get lost in it and I will want to stay in it and live in it. And Purple Rose of Cairo was very amazing to me.
Do you have siblings, can I ask?
I have one brother 2 years older.
2 years older. So when you were going with your mom, were you going with your brother as well? Or was it just you two?
No. I mean, I'm sure at some point, yes. But my memories were just my mom taking me.
That's very sweet. Kevin Pollak, what is the film that scared you the most? And do you like being scared? You haven't done a lot of horrors, I see.
No, I don't. I'm not a big fan of the genre itself, unless it's a brilliant film that also happens to be incredibly scary. So, you know, the obvious example, or maybe most awarded example, would be Silence of the Lambs. But The Thing was one of the scariest, easily, But I'm so old that I know a lot of people have said The Exorcist, but I'm so old that when I was probably just out of high school or still in it a little, that movie came out and it was like you had to gear yourself up to go see it. People were passing out. They were puking. You know, when it first came out, the theaters, it was something no one had ever seen. And I know it's a bit trite all these years later, but
I watched it recently, you know, older and wiser, I watched The Exorcist, and I was really impressed. Like, I was like, oh, this is a fucking good film. It is incredibly, it's incredibly sort of serious, and it's a very long build, and it's dark as fuck.
Crazy build. Yeah. The first 30, 40 minutes, we haven't even met Linda Blair. It's bizarre. Hire an editor. What's happening? with the buildup. So I appreciate that you had that experience, but still imagine it's the 70s and you're 17, 18.
But what I mean is with all the buildup that everyone had in the 70s, it isn't a sort of schlocky, it isn't a fun film. Like it's very fucking heavy. And so to go in with all that buildup thinking, oh, is this going to be scary?
Yes.
And for it to deliver on, this is horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. I really mean, back to that, no one had ever seen anything like
it.
That element is impossible for you to experience.
Did you go with someone? Was it like
a couple friends, had to have a few drinks, well underage, but needed a couple of drinks, had to leave the theater at one point to go to the bathroom to sort of breathe through what was happening.
Love it.
Yeah, it was harrowing. But in terms of all of that nonsense taken away, just a film-going experience, I would say Alien for the haunted house, scary movie, and The Thing for the monster scary movie.
Great, great answers. Riddle me this. What is the film that made you cry the most, Kevin Pollak? Do you cry easily? Are you a crier?
Well, as you get older, you cry at the drop of a hat, yes. And I don't know why it's always a drop of a hat.
Yeah, why is that so sad?
Why not? Why are we not crying at the drop of a shoe, people?
Whose hat was it?
Yeah, I realize I tend to cry more about hope than heartbreak. Mm. When something's incredibly hopeful. Another trite movie I think that's underappreciated because it's a holiday film that is actually a perfect film, and the structure of it from a writer's standpoint, It's a Wonderful Life is, its design is, it's otherworldly.
Yeah.
And the hope in that film probably caused me to cry more than most films. Yeah.
I mean, you're quite right. What is the film that people don't like? It is not generally critically acclaimed, but you love it and you don't care what anyone says.
Jamie really helped me with this one because I was struggling to try to figure out what movie that's shit. Usually if a film is outright panned and hated, I'm sort of in line. But Cable Guy
is brilliant.
As a singular comedic performance, again, from a guy who Jim Carrey had sort of established himself with those first two movies out of the, you know, right out of the gun when in
Ace Ventura.
In the beginning of that career. Yeah. The Mask. They were both, I think, within the same.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember he came out on the Academy Awards to present, and his film, one of those two movies, had just become the biggest comedy opening in history. Wow. And he walked out of the Academy Awards to present, and his opening line was, "So, how was your weekend?" I thought that was pretty great. So, but his performance in The Cable Guy was not this big, giant slapstick. Mm. It was a caricature of design, but I thought it was a dramatic performance.
Yes.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, it's a really interesting dark film. That
also, there was a stigma that he was the first actor to be paid $20 million for that movie, which I promise you was a big reason people hated it.
Yeah, I agree, and they were just ready to.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
What is the film that you used to love, you loved it very much, you've watched it recently, and you do not like it anymore, for whatever reason?
This is going to be controversial.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Yeah.
Strap in.
This is a movie that's beloved, and it's complete bullshit.
What is it?
Tootsie.
Wah, wah, wee, wah.
Exactly.
Tell us everything.
Yeah, here's the deal. There's not a redeeming quality about the lead character. He is a horrendous narcissist, horrible person, and to everyone in his life. And I refuse to root for him, this fictitious character. And also, he's a man in drag every single second. And no one is saying, are you with LaCongefa? What's happening? I reject the premise. It's the performances around it, Sidney Pollack, Charles Durning, Bill Murray, Terry Garr, Jessica Lange, they're all breathtakingly wonderful. And what Dustin is doing to me is complete horseshit. But I will say this also. Tom Cruise is the reason Rain Man is a great film.
Go on.
Dustin Hoffman won the Oscar, but he is a single note performer throughout the entire film. His character has no arc. He's one note all the way through. It is the arc and ride that Tom Cruise's character goes through that we root for, that we live vicariously through and care so very much about that film. So I'm not saying, and also, you know, that wonderful story of Laurence Olivier on Marathon Man.
You can tell it just in case people don't.
Well, I want to qualify a little bit by saying Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate is one of the all-time great performances.
Have you worked with Dustin Hoffman? It seems like you have issues here.
I've not. I know him a little bit personally just to say hello, and he's super sweet. But he and Al Pacino suffered, I think, from a very similar thing at some point. I don't know what year it was that Al Pacino became an old black blues player, but dear God, they gave him awards for yelling, and guess what? That's all he did. And now he's got to touch everything. The hands got to move. They got to go over here. They got to touch. I believe there's a time when we can't move things around. So these guys are all about tricks and shit. And it's, I don't buy it and I don't care about it. And so, yeah. So Dustin's performance is, it's a man in drag. And I don't buy any of it.
You may have this answer. It is your films to be buried with. I did talk about it because it came up on someone else's list a while ago, but the only thing I don't get about Tootsie is the ending, spoiler alert, is that he pulls off his makeup and is like, I'm a man, I'm your brother or something, and thinking that that will get him out of this soap opera. But I'm like, you've just opened a whole new set of storylines for your character. There's no way that's the end of your story. Like, the writers are going, rubbing their hands together. Thank God, now we've got 3 seasons left. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
you've just given us a whole new...
Especially on a soap opera.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tootsie.
Yeah. Yeah. And the voice that he does throughout the film, it's just, oh, God. And then I'm Dorsey. I'm Jack Dorsey. You know, whatever it is when he comes out of the makeup. I'm your brother. Again, all the performances around him are just breathtaking. Sidney Pollack was one of the all-time great actors.
He's a great fucking actor.
And that's truly great. Yeah. And his work in that film is one of the funniest things in it.
Have you directed yourself, Kevin Pollack?
No. So the first thing I directed was a documentary called Misery Loves Comedy, mm-hmm. the premise of which is do you have to be miserable to be
I've seen
funny.
It. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah. So that I
It's great.
I directed that.
It's really great. And
Sundance.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. A couple of Brits. I got Coogan. I got Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. Mm-hmm. Did I get Stephen Merchant? I think I did. Anyways, it's about 60 annoyingly famous funny people and interviewed them all these questions. And so they wanted me to be on camera a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you just hear my voice on occasion. I have a real problem with documentarians who put themselves at the center of the – that really annoys the shit out of me. And so I didn't – and then the comedy I directed, The Late Bloomer, I was a gun for hire, and they wanted me to do one of the parts, and I said, oh, I can cast much better than me. And I got J.K. Simmons 6 months after he had won the Oscar.
Oh, wow.
And so I gave him the upgrade and said, yeah, I don't know what your experience has been like.
I'm always fascinated by people who can direct themselves, like just the sheer sort of logistics of it. Of are you running back to the monitor after every take to watch yourself? Are you, you know, getting past the embarrassment of going, yeah, I was perfect in that take, but we need to go again because you weren't. Or do you know what I mean? Like
and also you just see it in their eyes.
I don't know, like it's difficult.
Yeah. And I would think if you're acting in a scene with the director who's you're acting opposite of, you would probably see in their eyes not them being in the moment, but rather studying your performance.
Exactly, yeah. It's so fascinating.
yeah.
Kevin Pollak, what is the film that means the most to you? Yeah. Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because the experience you had around seeing that film will always make it special to you, Kevin Pollak.
Yeah, so I thought about this one, and as many times early on as my mom took me to movies, it sort of accentuated when my father finally took my brother and I both to see Blazing Saddles. And I saw my father laugh uncontrollably, almost like a lunatic, which was a little unnerving. But also I was laughing at the same time, and it was a connection between us that ran much, much deeper than what we had previously. So that was redonkulously impactful.
That's fucking nice.
Yeah. It was, I mean, my dad was not a man of many words. So, you know, to see any outpouring of any emotion was just spectacular. In fact, sidebar, and you may not need this, but when my parents brought home Bill Cosby's first comedy album, only if they'd put in the liner notes, you know, will become the most prolific serial rapist in history. You know, maybe we don't listen to it. I don't know. But it wasn't in the liner notes. No. So, and they would play that first album on the stereo hi-fi, the 7-foot-wide piece of furniture. And when I watched my parents laugh uncontrollably at the guy talking from the furniture, that was a epiphany that as soon as no one was around, I sat in front of the hi-fi by myself and listened to that album over and over and over and over and over and over again until I could stand in front of it and lip sync, not knowing that lip syncing was a thing or that I had created something. I was just interacting. I was just playing. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be the guy telling those stories that made my parents laugh uncontrollably. And it all sort of started. And then my mom came home one afternoon when I was doing that and literally caught me and said, I mean, knee-jerk reaction, you're doing that for the Zookers at Passover. So my first performance at 10 was the painted-out white brick fireplace that had a little stage. And I lip-synced the Noah and the Ark routine off the first album.
Absolutely stormed it.
Now, is that a British term for killed it?
Yeah, smashed it.
Okay, I crushed it. I was my first experience performing in front of anyone. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, it was relatives. And I didn't know what every comedian will learn, which is never perform for your family.
Never, ever, ever.
Oh, God. There's nothing. Oh, buddy, don't do it. But this is different. Yeah. This was a precocious 10-year-old lip-syncing.
You're doing Cosby.
What would become one of the greatest stand-up comedians of all time. So it's his material. It's his voice. He's killing. I'm just this precocious 10-year-old mimicking.
You're just channeling
it. Lip-syncing. Yeah.
That's great.
I clear my throat when he does on the album, and I'm a star.
That's great.
That was basically it.
What is the film you most relate to, Kevin Pollak?
Okay, so I, in my 20s and probably 30s, was dangerously jealous as a boyfriend. And when I saw Albert Brooks's film Modern Romance, one of the most hilarious movies about an insanely jealous guy and what we're capable of putting ourselves through. Have you seen the film?
That's so interesting. Modern Romance? Yeah, go on. Tell me.
Well, so, you know, hi, he goes to the, like, CVS. Hi, do you have a doll? You pull a string. It says, Mary, I'm sorry. You know, this the obsession of, oh, no, no, you're not going to wear that dress outside, are you? We have some sewing to do. There's men out there. They rape. That's all they do. Honey. You know, this guy was just – so I got to laugh at him and then myself and the ridiculousness of being obsessively jealous and controlling.
How is your jealousy these days?
In the beginning, because she's considerably younger, it was a tough go.
Yeah.
It was a tough go. Yeah, yeah. There was a learning curve for me. But I think it also had something to do with I wouldn't want to belong to any club that would have me as a member, so I'm suspicious of someone who says yes.
Completely get that. Completely get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you love me, you're an idiot.
Well, or if you love me, more to the point, you're a suspect. And I have to unravel this case.
But you have got better on the old jealousy?
Yeah. Thankfully, the majority of the 15 years has been jealousy-free.
That's great. Congratulations.
I mean, every now and then it comes up. I don't invest too much in things like saying I'm a Scorpio, but apparently that's one of arguably the single most jealous nature people. Mm. I don't fucking know. Yeah, it's definitely my DNA, and I.
Interesting.
So I've calmed the hell down, and every now and then I'll get a pang, but I'll recognize it and say, oh, Jesus, buddy, take it easy.
Jamie, I'm about to say something, and I know that what I'm about to say isn't fair, but you cannot go out tonight.
Yeah. We got some sewing to do.
Christopher Walken, what is the sexiest film you've ever seen?
I'll be honest with you, Brett, this is easy. I've been waiting for quite some time, truth be told, for you to ask this question. And I feel strongly about my answer that you haven't had anyone say it, A. And two, it speaks to the nature of what sexy is. The film, of course, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. When I saw the film, which I saw many times in the motion picture theater, I instantly fell in love with Catherine Ross. I wanted to be the man she chose from all the men. But also, there was no one sexier than those two fellas. And I didn't have confusion. I had draw to be them. I wanted to be with her and be them. And all three reasons were sexy. They were sexy. So there you go. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
There is a reason you are the top of 33,000 impressions. That was excellent.
It's so cheap.
Tell me this. There is a subcategory to this question you can answer as yourself or as Christopher Walken. Mm. And the subcategory is Troubling Boners, Worrying Wide-Ons, a film you found arousing.
Yeah.
You weren't sure you should.
Yeah, I've heard tell of this on episodes I've listened to. And again, I've got a couple of, you know, I think it has to do with puberty for me when you're sort of shocked by the physical development in your pants. Yeah. And it came at a very young age, Bye Bye Birdie. I was probably preteen. And Anne Margaret does some sort of dance with a low-cut top. I think it might be at the end. It's either at the beginning or the end. And she is doing things that a 9-year-old or whatever I was had not experienced watching, and things happened. And then the other one, I loved A Shot in the Dark.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was Britt Eklund. There was some, either Britt Eklund or Britt Eklund type in that film. That British blonde slight over bite that became,
an obsession.
A real instant bone. So A Shot in the Dark is this hilarious comedy where I'm just falling in love with the comedic genius, and then she comes on screen, and I don't even see Peter Sellers. Mm. Yeah,
I mean, there is nothing troubling about Anne Margaret Aubrey Secklin, but I will accept your answer.
Well, the troubling part was simply that
your age and the context.
These were not films to get boners at. Neither one were designed to be sexy. I don't think.
My spin-off podcast, Films to Get Boners At, will be out next year.
.com.
Objectively, what is the greatest film of all time? Might not be your favorite, but it's the pinnacle of cinema.
Yeah, I struggle with this one a lot. Mm-hmm. It's the word objectively. Yeah. My struggle, Brett Goldstein, and I do want to qualify it, that I am a genuine fan of yours.
God bless you.
And I am not a fan of most people, let alone performers.
And I'm very honored.
We've seen too much. We know too mm-hmm. much. And I see through most, everything just reeks of effort, and it makes me a little uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And because there's a sadness behind, oh, you poor thing, stop trying so hard. So when I do like someone or performer or film, there's an effortless quality about it. So the objectively speaking part takes me and my opinion out of it. It just asks me to sort of acknowledge a great film, which I'm happy to do. Now, I'm going to also, I realize I'm coming full circle around to answering in the vein I believe you're asking the question, and being objective, taking myself out of the equation. Terms of Endearment.
Wow.
So James L. Brooks, through poker, became a friend, plays occasionally in my home game. Yes. He had already won countless Emmys, having created The Mary Tyler Moore Show and co-creating Taxi. And then, of course, The Simpsons. But his very first time at the helm, first screenplay that he wrote that he directed, first. He's the only human being in history who can say the following. My very first time directing a film that I wrote, the film won Best Screenplay, Best Director, and Best Picture. It's never happened to any other first-timer. Wow. And for those reasons, I think, objectively speaking, it's a masterpiece. Because I was thinking about, you know, it's got to be Kubrick. It's got to be some movie that maybe I'm not a fan of. And then there's the obvious choice of The Godfather, because it's perfect and it's epic and it's changed the way people thought of film. But then I thought of my friend Jim Brooks, and I realized, no.
I love that.
That is, objectively speaking, in a category of its own. So that's my
answer. I think that's a perfect answer, and I'm going to give you 27 points for it. What is the film that you could or have watched the most over again?
So this changes over time. Mm. I did see Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid 12 times in the movie theater. I wanted to be in that world as a teenager, and I didn't want to leave it, so I just kept going back to it. But I then became obsessed quite recently with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I want to spend at least an hour every day with Brad Pitt's character in the car, just driving around L.A.
Driving around L.A. with less traffic.
Yeah. So I saw it a couple times in the theater, but then once it's on the streaming and whatnot, I've probably seen it 15 times. I'm a big fan of the filmmaker in general, but this one, man, it just...
Have you read the novel that he wrote of it?
I listened to Jennifer Jason Leigh read the audio, which I highly recommend.
Well, I read the book. I loved it. Really, really loved it.
The novelization.
Yeah, it's great. That is a cool answer. What, Kevin Pollak? We don't like to be negative. Mm. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
Okay, this was another tough one. And I had an answer, and that was Jamie. She's not just the brains of the outfit, but I've had to come to grips with I can't actually function without her. So I told her what my choice was. First of all, I agreed with an earlier guest of yours. Now You See Me.
Okay.
Was a fucking insult.
Right.
And the review should have been Now You See Me, Now You Wish You Hadn't. Holy God, was that insulting. Mm. Just the earnestness of those performances was... Ugh. But when a great filmmaker makes a, a self-indulgent bad film. I find that the most difficult and painful. So I was talking to her about it, and she said, do you really want to go out of your way to shit on that filmmaker?
It's a good question from Jamie.
And the answer's not really, and that's why she's the brains of the outfit. So I decided to make it a little more personal. Okay. I'm in a truly horrible film, and the reason it's so painful is that it's my favorite comedic performance in a film of my own. The film itself is complete shite, soup to nuts. I can't be objective about my own performance. Yeah. I just know the doing of it was a joy comedically I've never experienced elsewhere.
Hang on. Was the film called Soup to Nuts?
I wish.
Oh, no. What's the film?
The film, The Whole 10 Yards.
Oh, okay.
So the Whole 9 Yards is pretty damn good. I would put it in my I've done 10 good films.
Right.
But The Whole 10 Yards is unwatchable. It really is garbage. But I got to wear prosthetic makeup and play the father of my character from the first film, this 80-year-old Hungarian mobster with the shock of white hair and the Lou Wasserman big goggle glasses. And it was a joy beyond description. So that made it so much more painful. Yeah. And I had to really embrace how shitty this movie is. So there you go.
Did you know while you were making it that this was a bad film?
No, it came off the wheels a few times on certain days. Mm-hmm. And you were like, that's not what was in the script. Why are we doing this?
God.
Yeah, I guess.
You're in comedy. You're a comedian. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most, Kevin Pollak?
Okay, so again, the singular answer is The Struggle. As a member of the Writers Guild since 1987, proudly.
Congrats.
Thank you. From a writer's standpoint, mm-hmm. page per page, jokes on the page. There's no film funnier than Arthur. The original, the remake, is unwatchable garbage and should be set on fire.
Agreed.
The original, written by I think 30-year-old who died maybe a couple of years after the film came out. Steve Gordon was his name. And they shot that film for several years. Nobody, none in the studios, who cares about a rich drunk? Yeah. No one's going to care about this guy. But it's not just Dudley Moore's performance, which is flawless and revelatory. It is the amount of jokes on every page of that script is insane. Then my favorite comedy of all time is The In-Laws, and it has to do with the performances. There again, remake, set it on fire. I would argue that the film The In-Laws performances and script is pound for pound the funniest film ever made. And then Jamie, the all-around perfect person, reminded me that we went to see No Country for Old Men in a theater, and that is such a dark comedy at times. I laughed so hard and loud that when the lights came up and the movie was over, the three people in front of me stood up, and one of them turned back to me and said, "Well, I guess I'll see the film again."
No.
Some other time, because I had ruined it. No. I do have when something is, you know, when you laugh involuntarily. Yeah. I don't know what your laugh sounds mm-hmm. like when you laugh involuntarily. Mine is pretty loud.
That no one expected that answer.
It's no. You're not going to get No Country for Old Men. But there are times of Javier Bardem's performance that are so fucking funny to me. Dear Lord.
He's amazing. I saw Being the Ricardos. Thank you very much. And he is so good. He is just like, just like, fucking hell. That is one of the most charismatic screen actors.
Yes.
Like, you're just like, he's so, you just love it.
I agree. I think he's Mount Rushmore.
Yeah,
there are a few actors like Jeff Bridges who's done flawless work in 20 amazing films. That one different than the other, no one more diverse, Starman to Baker Brothers or whatever. Yeah, Baker Brothers, sexy to, you know, all of it. And I would say Javier Bardem is the same thing. It's a different performance every time. And there's nothing this guy can't.
Yeah. Amazing. Kevin Pollak, you've been amazing. Now, however, when you were in your Tesla, it was the fifth Tesla you'd had, looking at all the buttons, you were pressing all the buttons, and you drove straight into a wall, and you died on impact, and Elon Musk appeared in a helicopter, but I was walking past with a coffin, you know what I'm like, and I said, Elon, don't worry about it, mate, I got it. And he went, is this no pictures, this is going to look bad for us? I said, don't worry, we'll make it audio, it'll be fine. and he went, shoop, went straight back up in his helicopter, which then turned into a rocket, and off he went to Mars. And I get it. The state you're in, though, I mean, it's a lovely car, but you've made a real mess of it. I have to chop out the fucking door, I have to chop out bits of metal, it's all over you. Anyway, I get you plus bits of the Tesla into this coffin. I stuff you in. It's absolutely rammed in there. There's only enough room in it for one DVD. But I then find out you've already got one in the coffin. I have to lift you up again, and underneath it, there is the film that you're going to take to show everyone on movie night when it's your turn in heaven. And that film is Fantastic Mr. Fox.
That's right.
You happy with that?
I am. Very happy with that.
It's a lovely film. A really lovely film. And a lovely choice.
I need one more, and 17% more.
It's a fucking brilliant film. I really too many percent.
Let's shoot for the middle. You know, it is. I love Rushmore and the Royal Gene Hackman's performance in the Royal Tenenbaums is a comedic clinic that is almost unmatched.
Yeah.
But the Fantastic Mr. Fox, just in terms of, I don't know. Everything of creativity, performance, surprise, delight. A big fan of Critters in general. Bill Murray as the, what is he, the Badger accountant or something? Fuck me. Yeah, it's magical. It's magical.
It really is. Kevin Pollak, is there anything you would like to tell people to listen to look out for, to watch coming up for you? And out of your 300 upcoming projects.
Thank you for waiting for season 4 of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Those of you who give a shit about that particular show, sorry.
Yes, please.
We got pushed to February, but thank you for your patience. So I would invite you to forgive us and tune in February. Look, if you want your hammers in a day, sometimes two, then you get Mrs. Maisel for free. Okay.
That's a nice bonus.
And then the
bonus.
Other thing is...
It's a lovely bonus.
The other thing is I, after 10 years of hosting the Kevin Pollak chat show at the forefront, back when you had... In 2009, when you had to explain to people what a podcast was, I gave it up in 19 after 10 years and 400 episodes. I was done with podcasting. And then about 2 years ago, I started a all-improvised comedy podcast with some brilliant improvisers I saw at the West Side Comedy Theater and handpicked them. And they're brilliant and amazing. And yeah, it's called Alchemy This. So if the idea of an all-improvised comedy podcast where we do three scenes that were all scenes suggested by fans, either through Patreon or through emails, if that interests you at all with brilliantly fast, fearless, funny fuckers, then check out Alchemy This.
That's fucking
however
great.
You get your podcast. Yep.
And of course, Willow will be with us soon.
That's right. Willow and the other reason I was in the UK, Better Things, fifth and final season of the Pamela Adlon show.
Amazing. Yep. All right, Kevin Pollak, I really appreciate your time. I'm very grateful for you doing this. Thank you. You've been wonderful. And I hope you have a wonderful death. Good day, sir.
Thank you very much.
So that was episode 179. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Kevin. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but don't tell me about the show. Tell me about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a very nice thing to read. I'll tell you that much. Thank you so much to Kevin Pollak. Kevin Pollak, can you believe it? Thank you, Kevin, for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come join me next week, where my brilliant special guest, I believe, will be the wonderful and hilarious Danielle Pinnock. So that is it for now. In the meantime, thank you for listening. I hope you have a lovely new year, and please be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees, and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism, and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.